720 WGN on the road with Dane live here in the Allstate Skyline studio high atop Chicagoland, a snowy Chicagoland. We can see it. We're going to be even more dependent on Bob Kessler to give us that weather forecast and the traffic as we go forward through the show. A little bit of a dusting, nothing we can't handle as Chicagoans this winter. I don't want to jinx it. You know, I'm knocking on the marble slash for Micah of what it is that we have here as a broadcast table. But this has been a pretty easy winter. Ashley, what do you think? You know, you've lived through a lot of winters, not as many as maybe some people, but this has been okay so far.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. Not too bad at all.
It's not over yet.
Well, knock on wood. So far, it hasn't been too bad, but yeah. I'm over it. The snow can go away now. I'm done.
You ready for spring?
Oh, yeah. I'm so ready.
All right. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about some world travel, some places where maybe it is spring. We're going to be kind of hitting on a bunch of different cylinders. Visit Indiana is south. The contingency, the delegation, if you will, from Indiana, honest to goodness, Indiana. They are going to be in studio with us talking about some road trip worthy options for. We talk about road trips all the time, and we have gone to Indiana. It is a neighbor state. A lot of great things to happen down there, and they've got some cool ones kind of on the docket. We are going to be sharing with them a little bit later on in the program. And I mentioned it's Elvis's birthday. That's right, baby. So Brian Grant from the Volo Auto Museum, they have everything, all the celebrity cars. And when you think about a celebrity that is identified with cars as far as pink Cadillacs and a lot of vintage automobiles, Elvis is there, and it is his birthday, and they are just kind of blowing it up. They're having a lot of the Cadillacs, some of the cars known for and owned by Elvis on display there. They're having an Elvis, I don't want to say impersonator, stylist, right? Someone who's going to channel the spirit and the sound of Elvis. That's going to be coming up a little bit later on today, so stay tuned for that. Plus, Ashley, you're going to play some Elvis-themed bumpers, right?
Oh, yeah, I will. I got you.
Travel Juden from Food Network. He is one of the stars. He's, I don't know if you've only been on one time, if you could be a star yet, but I will contend that he has all the makings of the next great food celebrity. He's on Worst Cooks in America with Chef Ann Burrell, our good friend Tyler Florence, and he is on there. He's going to be on again tomorrow night. Excited to have him in studio a little bit later on in the program to talk Worst Cooks in America, and then an event that brings some of the best cooks in Chicagoland, especially those with an affinity for the world of bacon. Seth Zero from Bacon Fest is going to be on with us as well to talk about that journey, that road trip that leads to one of the top events in the country. It happens right here at Bacon Fest. So a ton coming up. When we come back from this break, we're going to have Danielle Bennett, Diva Q. She is traveling the world in the name of barbecue. She's going to talk a little bit about tailgating, hopefully, right? We'll get some insight for, because we could still tailgate and celebrate even though the Bears aren't around. Ashley, do you think that's still fair that people, if they had planned to kind of have some great food this weekend, even if the Bears aren't going to be with them, they can do it?
Oh, yeah, always.
All right, so stay tuned for that. We're going to have Diva Q on with us next when we come back. It's On the Road with Dane, 720 WGN.
Hey, this is Diva Q, and you're On the Road with Dane on WGN.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised.
720 WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Skyline studio. And on the line with us, we have one of the top personalities in barbecue. You've seen her on the Today Show, Travel Channel, Chopped, Grill Masters on the Food Network, and of course on American Grilled and Barbecue Pit Masters. She is also the author of the best-selling book, Diva Q's Barbecue, 195 Recipes for Cooking with Family and Friends. One and only Diva Q, Danielle Bennett. Danielle, welcome to WGN.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
This is the time of year, you know, when people get out there and grill. And I don't know that it is, because I think coast to coast people love getting out. They love barbecuing. They love kind of making stuff, whether it's the backyard or wherever it is, or some kind of family function, or maybe tailgating for a sporting event for those people who still have teams that are successfully playing games or any of those things. But are you surprised, as somebody who's been in the game, doing it at the highest level on the competition side and certainly on the media TV ambassador side for the discipline of barbecue, are you surprised at just how, I mean, it never stops. It's getting more and more popular all the time.
You know, I remember that I could always count on January, February, March, April being my like down months, right? And I remember I could like kind of like coast through it a bit, do a lot more writing. And it is just constantly exploding now on all fronts. And, you know, I literally, my phone has not, and my email box is always full of people, whether they're producers or general public, asking questions about barbecue, wanting me to appear on segments. I've never seen anything like this. And of course, you know, I barbecue 365, 24/7. And for me, it's just awesome. It really is. It's truly amazing.
Well, I got to tell you, Danielle, you're part of the problem, you know, and we're going to get into the book. Well, you put out books that people love. You put out recipes that inspire people to get in there and make some great stuff. You're absolutely everywhere on social media, always showing off, you know, the next great thing that you've made and inspiring other people to go ahead and do it. But I got to tell you, too, is part of it is with Traeger. I think, you know, there's a lot of mystery and certainly a lot of difficulty in being successful in the barbecue world. It isn't that easy. But with Traeger, and I've seen the I don't want to say it's like a commercial, because it's really almost like a whole show where you get in there, you take people with you, introduce them to the product, the technique, pellet smoking and all that. You really kind of educate people.
You know, it is three words: consistent, repeatable results. You know, I've owned 65 barbecues. So I have experienced all gamuts, all segments of the barbecue industry, and can run just about every grill out there. And one of the things that I keep coming back to is consistency and repeatable results. And it takes a lot of the guesswork out of it, takes a lot of the fear factor from, you know, lighting gas barbecues, takes a lot of the fear factor and maintenance from charcoal. And that consistent, repeatable results always comes back with great wood-fired flavor. And I think that's a big part of it. You know, we're taking away the hardships that make an awesome meal happen every day.
You know, you really are. And you're making it one of those things that everybody can get in there. They can make some of those difficult recipes that people don't even attempt, right? You know, and it's one of those things that it makes it as easy as possible. And the versatility is there too, right? You're cooking all sorts of things.
Yeah, you know, for me, I think one of the things I always try to showcase on my social media sites is I specifically don't just do the big meats. You know, I've got lots and lots of barbecue awards and meats and things like that. But what I try to show people is exactly what you just said in the versatility. You know, I'll bake something like a puff pastry, a beautiful Danish. The very next day, maybe I'm braising off a beautiful stew. I have done everything from, you know, scotch eggs wrapped in sausage to something light and delicate like a pavlova and every dessert in between. And one of the things is that I try to think and try to tell people it's not a smoker. It's a wood-fired grill that does all of those things from braising, roasting, baking, barbecuing, grilling, and smoking. And I think that is the key. And I know I sound like a commercial, but if you look at my social media and our entire amazing Traeger Pro team that runs the gamut from outdoors people to great guys over in California that just love to barbecue to people right here in Florida to, you know, the Northeast, we have this whole gamut of Traeger pros that are beloved in their industry that are doing everything on their grills. And I mean everything. And I think that's really awesome.
When they sat down with you, obviously, you look at the pedigree and the resume and all the places that you've been and a trusted voice in the barbecue community. I mean, so you're a natural fit for it. But did you guys, when you did create, you know, really what is kind of changing the industry, and I think changing people's lives as far as the kind of ways that they're able to enjoy meats, barbecue, their backyard and all that stuff. Did you guys sit down and say, well, here's things we need to definitely convey, or here's, because there's a lot of it that, you know, I mean, you probably forgot more than a lot of people will know that maybe would be essential for those people just being introduced to it.
Well, I think one of the things, the key messages is that they really want it. Not, it's not just a grill. It's a whole lifestyle. I Traeger every day. It's not just a grill to me. It's a part of my natural outdoor kitchen. It's a part of my natural outdoor life. You know, I get up in the morning. I do realize I barbecue more than most people. But the thing is, it's a natural extension of everything that we do in our homes every single day. You know, your outdoor appliances, your outdoor kitchen appliances should be purchased with the same care and thought out with the same care as, say, your oven or your fridge or your laundry supplies. And I think that the whole thing is that it's not just a grill. It's a lifestyle, and we all embrace it.
When it comes to sports, and of course, we're mourning the end of the Chicago Bears football season. The listeners know we're talking with Diva Q herself, Danielle Bennett. And off the air, she had shared that she's a big Buffalo Bills fan. So we know, we had all said that at least for the last 10 years for the Chicago Bears, and I think for a long time for the Bills, the best part of Football Sunday is probably the tailgate. Right now, you can't guarantee.
Absolutely. And especially if you cheer for my team, the tailgate becomes everything every single time they play. So, unfortunately, I'm married to a Patriots fan, which makes my life hell some days.
Oh, my gosh. You've got to hear, you know, and they never lose. I don't know that that's fair. Now, in defense of your husband, is he at least from the eastern half of the United States? Because when we've got fans of the Patriots here, and some of them are ladies that just, you know, they find Tom Brady appealing for sure. You know, we get that. And certainly there's a lot of great players. But sometimes it's a little too easy just to pick that team that always wins.
No, my husband's from Rhode Island originally. So he is, you know, everything Boston. In our house, we have the most equally divided sports room ever. For every Toronto or Buffalo picture, there's a Boston one. We are very much a divided household. Our friends think it's hilarious when they come over. And, you know, we'll be arguing the entire time. And, of course, my team always loses. My teams always lose. I am not giving up on them, though. I'm an eternal optimist. And coming back to tailgating, at least we eat really well every single time.
Is there something, because people, you know, hey, maybe the schedule has changed as far as what teams that you're going to be watching, depending on the games, but people still want to, you know, either do their home gating or tailgating or doing whatever they want to do on Sunday and enjoy some of that food. Is there like a go-to thing that DivaQ does on game day?
You know, a lot of times there's two things that I love, probably very consistently for tailgating. The first would be the bacon-wrapped cream cheese stuffed jalapenos, also known as atomic buffalo turds. They're one of the most popular things that I've ever served at any tailgate. And, of course, that is so easy. You know, recipe is in my cookbook. The other thing I love to have on hand, and I just posted one, actually, is a thinly sliced, previously cooked tri-tip. So one of the great things is that a tri-tip is only a 2 to 3 pound bottom beef sirloin roast. You can actually smoke it the day before. The day of the game, you can go in a lot of directions with it. You can slice it thin for sandwiches. I did a big French dip, and you could do nachos with it. Also, of course, the standby is always to have pulled pork ready on the go because you could reheat it in a crock pot really easily the next day after you've smoked it. So pulled pork, tri-tip, and atomic buffalo turds for tailgating, you can't miss with those.
Oh, that sounds crazy. Well, you know, okay, the tri-tip is one of those things that's kind of getting a little more where people are getting introduced to it, learning how and ways to use it. So that's great that it's in the book. You mentioned Scotch eggs a little bit. They've kind of made a resurgence, too. Those are getting super, super popular. The book is DivaQ's Barbecue, 195 Recipes for Cooking with Family and Friends. And that's, I think, another part of the problem as you look at how busy you are and you don't have a lot of time during the winter to kind of rest and relax. Part of it is because you're creating so many opportunities for people to get in there and do stuff. So let's talk about the book, the inspiration. Was it just to kind of document some of your adventures, or was it to kind of get out there and just share some cool stuff that's going on the grill side?
Well, you know, the cool thing is the book has actually been out for 2 years now. It's still selling extremely well. And one of the great things is that they're real recipes for real people, and they're all kind of like my favorites over the years. You know, so there's a smoked cold pimento cheese. There's an apple cheese galette in there. There is the tri-tip. There is the, you know, how to make the best bombastic, amazing burgers ever. And then there's the big meats, like the briskets and the pulled pork. So it's literally a cross-representation of so many things that I love, even right down to cheesy monkey bread. And I mean everything in between. So it is real food for real people. I don't like pretentious food. I only like to serve stuff that people go, oh my gosh, I need more. And one of the things is the recipes just came out of that. It was years of people over at my house. I love to entertain. I have people at my house just about every single week for dinner. They're also my guinea pigs. So if they don't have that kind of reaction, I'm like, okay, it's an okay recipe, but, you know, it's not a great recipe. And so that's how the book came about. You know, I travel even more now internationally. I'm about ready to go off to New Zealand and Australia next month, back to Norway later on this year, over back again to Copenhagen and Germany, and then, of course, through probably 25 or 26 more states this year. And I'm constantly creating recipes because I think we all need real food for real people.
You know what? I wanted to ask you a little bit about that. On the road, you know, we cover family road trips, you know, transformative travel, all of that stuff. Had an opportunity to judge at the Jack this last October. And what's really cool about it is you see kind of that international presence and footprint that barbecue has, you know, and kind of the traditional American barbecue. We can go back to caveman days and there's always some kind of barbecue angle. But the kind of stuff that you do and that we do and that everybody's been doing for years, as you travel, talk a little bit about that. How, you know, I think the world is just, they're so excited about everything that's going on. They probably love having you out there.
Oh my gosh. It is so rewarding when you go to, say, for example, Germany or Norway, where they didn't have a lot of traditional American style barbecue, and you connect some dots. And then you have this, you know, amazing grill that's so easy to run, and they're getting these beautiful products out of them, and they embrace all American barbecue like gangbusters. They want to know about pulled pork. They want to know about brisket. They want to know the difference between a St. Louis cut rib and a baby back rib, and they're actually changing now their butchery in order to accommodate the American style cuts. You know, I remember last year, 2 years ago, I was in Israel teaching barbecue, and I actually was in the butcher stand teaching the butcher to cut out a brisket for me properly so that it would be more like with the point and the flat, not just the flat. I have been in other countries where, like, say, for example, Sweden, we had to go and teach them how to cut a pork butt that was, you know, an 8 to 9 pound pork butt that was more consistent in shape. And so I'm in there in the abattoir or the butchery, and I'm teaching them actually how to cut it actually to more American specs. And now I have these guys that have taken the classes like for a couple of years ago and saying, oh my gosh, it's so much easier to get cuts now. And it's just exploding over there, even more so here.
Wow, it's so crazy. You think about that, and there's trends and things that people like or are popular. But, you know, we've always said, and you could talk a little bit about it, is there's something special about barbecue, the community, how it comes together. I think in the DNA of the human being, there's something special about barbecue, brings people together for celebrations and all sorts of different things. And when you can go internationally and they kind of get that, and they want to get it, it's almost like, you know, you could say whatever, it's cultures or politics, whatever, we have a ton of differences, but barbecue can bring people together.
I could not agree with you more. Barbecue truly does bring food and people together. I've said it before publicly, I'll say it again here. Barbecue doesn't just feed your body. Barbecue feeds your soul as well, because somebody put their love and their effort. A lot of times our barbecue, our traditional American barbecue, takes a long time. And so one of the things is that during the cooking process, you have family time, you have friend time. It gathers people together, and it brings us together over great wood-fired cooking. And to be a part of that and to have seen it, you know, I'm going into my 13th year now. And so I'm not new at this. I've seen such a great growth, and there's a lot of people that have came before me as well. And to be a part of that growth internationally is such a spectacular opportunity with Traeger. And the opportunities that I've had to connect those dots, to see that enthusiasm, and once again, bring people together over food. Doesn't matter your politics, doesn't matter your color, doesn't matter your race. Sit down, let me feed you.
I think it's very, very cool. Certainly one of the top personalities in barbecue, Daniel Bennett, the EVQ, leading the way in a bunch of different things, not only helping America get better and make some better food and have some great times in the backyard with Traeger, but also all around the world, as kind of an ambassador for the world of barbecue. It's very cool to see. So, Danielle, for those people who want to keep up with your adventures, and it's not easy because you're always moving, social media, all that, how can they go?
You know, really easy. I've kept the same handle for everything just so people can find me. The biggest channel I have is my Instagram, where I post daily. It's DivaQBBQ. Really easy. That's the same for all my channels, whether it's my fan page or on Twitter. You can always find me online.
We'll have all the links up at WGNradio.com, and continued success. Travel safe, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for jumping on the show today.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Hey guys, this is Travell Judon from Food Network's Worst Cookers in America, and you are on the road with Dane, only on WGN.
720 WGN, on the road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Skyline studio. You know, we could see pretty far. I think we could see the future of the next maybe great cook that is going to be defending the culinary honor of Chicagoland. In studio, excited to have Travell Judon, and he is one of the contestants. He is Chicago's representative for Worst Cooks in America, Sunday at 8 p.m. on the Food Network. Travell, welcome to WGN.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you for having me here.
Well, see, this is it. This is the extra pressure. As if you didn't have pressure enough to kind of change your entire persona, it kind of changed, I think, your reputation as one of these terrible cooks out there, right? Now you've all got to do extra media, and now you know you did a little bit of social media beforehand, and now being on WGN here, we reached 38 states in Canada, the entire Midwest at all times, and now there's more pressure for you to win. But okay, so Travell, think about this. There's pressure also to legitimately, you know, walk the walk as a worst cook, right? So you got to be a certain amount of terrible so you can make that kind of redemption, right? That transformation, win that $25,000. Do you feel any pressure?
You know, not a lot of pressure, just a whole lot, a little bit, you know. It's an oxymoron, a whole lot, a little bit. But, yeah, my mouth is set on the $25,000. I got student loans I'm not going to pay. So I need the $25,000 to not pay those student loans, you know.
Well, Okay, think about it. It wasn't in the bio, that part of it, but I think it gives people maybe a more rounded perspective on, and I think we've all got things that we'd love to do with a little bit of money, but here's the thing. The dividends are going to pay, because not only, this isn't like a scratch-off lottery ticket where you're just going to win some money, you can spend it, pay some bills. You're going to be armed with the skills to be able to help your family. You got three kids, right?
I do.
You're doing a lot of, I read in the thing, and of course you've talked about it, a lot of fast food, and it's not great for you, right? And it also is expensive. Seems easy, costs a lot.
It adds up real fast. Yeah. I mean, before you know it, you're like hundreds and hundreds down, like in debt, all off, you know, Mickey D's and Burger King and Harold's Chicken, you know.
There's nothing wrong with those great American iconic franchises.
Nothing wrong with it, but every day is not good.
And the food that they create, and of course, like for the kids and everything, you're going to want to do that. So the motivation for getting into this, now you got to be a fan of Food Network. Obviously, for Worst Cooks in America, I have known and appreciated this show. I've covered this show. I remember talking to Bo McMillan, I think it's season one, and Amberell. And of course, Tyler Florence. I just texted him a little bit ago to see if he had any words of encouragement. I know he may be prevented from trying to give you an unfair advantage, even if it's on the inspiration side.
I love Tyler. Tyler's awesome.
Right.
Tyler is so nice on and off camera. He's so nice. If I can give a quick story about,
sure.
I filmed on my birthday, and we were actually, it was a long day of filming, and we were getting to do the first scene, and Tyler says, wait a minute, before we film anything, the whole crew, we got to sing happy birthday to Travell. I almost cried like a baby. I was like, wow.
See?
He cares.
You know? That's why he's Tyler Florence. You know, but that's the kind of thing, if you can appreciate, you can emulate it. And down the road, you know, when there's the Travell show, right?
Hey, man, brother, come on, Jesus. That's what I'm talking about.
You're going to be recognizing people's birthdays and kind of sharing that as well. So obviously you're a Food Network fan, so you watch it, but you're not oblivious to the food world. You're out there. What inspired you to get involved and do this? I know you want the money and obviously some concerns there, but this is going to be a lot of fun.
Well, you know, my wife really told me I need to kind of pick up the slack on a food side. With me touring, doing comedy, I'm a lot of times during the week I have the children and tour on the weekend. And so, you know, we were just eating out a lot. And it's not healthy to eat out so much processed foods and things like that. And also, like I said, it's not healthy to your bank account either. And so, you know, she's like, you know, come on, you got to try it. And my daughters, they always like, Daddy, we want pancakes. Daddy ain't making pancakes. I'm going to make you some cereal with some milk. And I got the milk chilled to nice degrees. That was breakfast. And so literally, like, it was just the pressure from my family of, like, you got to get better. Because I only had a one-trick pony, and that was fried chicken. I could fry chicken.
Oh. As long as you have one good skill, you know, because I'm actually, you know, we do a lot of food stuff. And sure, we can cook a little bit, but we really appreciate the grilling, the barbecue side of things. If you've got one go-to thing, I think you're okay.
Yeah, well, it's true, but you can't eat fried chicken every day. I mean, you know?
Probably could. But.
Well, yeah, you know, back when I grew up, like, you know, your grandma had fried chicken and rice for breakfast. You know, you'll wake up and smell that chicken in the morning. Praise God! I know that there's a God when you open them eyes and you. Oh man, I can go there and smell it right now. Even my wife's grandma, she was the same way. I mean, when she would come to Chicago from St. Louis, she'd be up frying chicken early in the morning. Like, you know, they don't make Big Mama like they used to make Big Mama. You know, Big Mama's gone.
Is it hard, Travell, to really come to terms with how powerful, like, your kids are? Like, they say, hey, we would like this. Yeah. Now, I never thought I had that kind of power. I'm not sure that I really did. But my kids, they wake up and they're like, they'd like bacon and rice. That's one of their favorite things. Right. You know, other than that, Munchkins or Pop-Tarts, I mean, they kind of get what they want. It's hard to resist them.
Well, yeah, you know, what's very crazy, too, though, is that, like, my daughter told her friend, because my daughter asked me a question, and I was like, you know what, I think about it. She turns to her friend and she says, he said he'll think about it. So I mean, he'll say yes by tomorrow. That really messed me up because, like, that's kind of like been my trend. I'm very upset that she kind of knew that. It's like, no. And so I got to just start saying no to keep my dad cred, you know?
Man, it is not easy. You got to be able to kind of defend yourself against the competition, whether it's the kids or whether it's the competition on the show. When you get out there, you got a chance. The show's going now. You got a chance to size up the competition. I always love this show because it is, you know, it's not like Chopped. You got three executive chefs from someplace and that's it. This is like the gamut. You've got a guy who wears no sleeves from New Jersey. You've got a very nice looking lady, Nancy. From D.C. You got West Coast, awesome. East Coast. Yeah. You've got it all. So is there anybody that you're looking at that either you see as like a front runner other than maybe yourself or somebody that you really got to watch out for?
Well, you know, I didn't pay attention too much to the red side because, you know, it's kind of like we're against each other starting off. And just honestly, like, you know, Brittany and Mickey were, like, awesome. Like, both of them, like, when they would cook, they were the ones, they were like my Goliaths in the competition to beat. Brittany's the model from Florida, and Mickey's the math teacher from Denver, Colorado. And so both of them, know they took a lot of great notes, and they just did exceptional. When we would go out there and do these challenges, I'm like, oh God, I can't believe it, you know. So they were hard, but so that was my go-tos, you know?
Now, is there sometimes people come, I used to mention, like a teacher and a model, not necessarily out there entertaining, speaking, because it's a different world. You get people that are really great on the chef side, they get on some of these shows, they lose track of all time, they have no idea, is speaking to the camera, projecting, kind of entertaining. That's what you do. Give a little bit of insight into the comedy side of things. You're used to kind of getting out there and entertain. Hey, Food TV, that's part of it. You got to make some good food, but you got to entertain people too.
Well, definitely. I mean, you know, just being real, it's still a show. And so the objective is you really have to kind of step out your box. Me, I haven't been in a box in a long time, so I was used to it. And stand-up itself is like really getting on stage and entertaining an audience of people who they want you to be funny, and they're not going to say anything back to you. So it's like, Fat Boy, make me laugh. So that's kind of – and then the difference, the same thing is like when you're doing the Food Network, you're doing your thing, but it's like – yeah, make us laugh. I mean, come on, this is a comedy food show, and so you had to say stuff. And the bad part though is, I never said anything I didn't really feel. Like on Sunday, one of the clips, the season premiere, one of the clips was about hummus. I had never had hummus before a day of my life, right. And when I first saw it, I thought it was ranch dressing.
Yeah, but see, the thing is like, what's great about this is you get to come at this as a person who has put themselves out, that they're looking for some guidance in this kind of food world. You're not out there saying you know everything. I think that's great. And hummus, for the, you know, there'll be people out there that love it. Obviously, it's a traditional great snack, but I think it's overrated. I'm not really a big fan. You won't find me eating hummus on a regular basis outside of maybe a show.
I'm mad that they actually, you know, post-production always wins. They actually put it in there when I said black people don't eat hummus.
Oh, no. Come on. You did that? Oh, I'm looking at some of the representatives. You know what? They're out there to try to, it's entertainment. You know?
I didn't mind, because that's how I felt, though. Like, one thing about me on this show is you're going to see straight up integrity. Like, when I say stuff, I mean what I say. I'm not saying it to be funny.
Yeah.
Because, like,
or critical, you know, in any way, right? Yeah. You're just making an observation.
I'm telling you what I really feel. Yep. And, I mean, in my opinion, I don't have to try to be funny. I'm going to be funny naturally, but if I have something I really want to know or don't get, I'm going to just say it. And, you know, sometimes I look dumb, but it's like, whatever.
Right.
I mean, I don't take myself seriously. Like, oh my God, I can't say that. No, I'm going to ask a question.
Yeah.
I'm trying to win this money. I got bills to pay.
And I think the reason I think that, you know, you've resonated with people is that they appreciate your authenticity. You build that into the comedy. Are you going to be building some of your experiences with this, or maybe some of the results, into some of the routines you do on stage?
So I've already started writing a lot of stuff from this show on my new stand-up special, and I just can't do it until, and so the hard part is, you know, we practice, so like when we do these open mics and stuff like that, we practice our material before we put it in front of a bigger audience. And it's so hard because right now contractually I can't talk about what I want to talk about, so I wrote some stuff that I'm gonna start working on once the show wraps.
What you're doing is you're kind of teasing it, you're saying like, it's really good, so
it's really good because I mean, we had, you know, Food Network did an awesome job putting together the cast. This was a different cast to me, and it just, we were a funny cast, you know, and it was a lot of jokes both on screen and off screen, and so I talked about a lot of it, and sorry guys.
You know, people are going to be enjoying that all season long. Sundays, 8 p.m. here in Chicago on the Food Network, Worst Cooks in America, and Travell will be front and center as well. For those people, I know you're going to be live tweeting, sharing a lot of social media as you go forward, as the show continues. Where can people kind of keep up with you, your adventures? Certainly see you out doing the comedy thing as well.
So my name, you might have to take a pen down. My first name is spelled like travel with an E. So T-R-A-V as in Victor, E-L-E, travel E. And last name, Judon, J-U-D as in dog, O-N as in Nancy. everything from YouTube to Instagram, everything is on there. And also, we're doing new vlogs that where I'm going to be showing like a lot of the behind the scenes, me doing press for Food Network, and also getting ready for an upcoming tour this spring as well. So a lot of cool things going on. So I'm going to pretty much remove the fourth wall of my life and share it with everybody.
Now, are you ready for this? You get into stand-up, you definitely, you know, you want to share what it is that you're doing, share your personality. And a good friend of the program, longtime guy, Jeff Morrow, you know him as like Sandwich King in the kitchen and all that kind of stuff. You know, he's an entertainer. He's a, you know, singer. He's a funny guy, whatever. He did not know that he would find his path to stardom through the food side of it. Do you see? I mean, because you were only one episode in, right? The next one is coming up tomorrow.
No, at a lot of people are you messages. I didn't expect that. I got a lot of messages. People saying you're funny, you're a beast, you're hilarious.
Yeah.
I never expected that. And honestly, I never expected my route to the top to go through Food Network.
Well, here it is.
Yeah.
It all started last Sunday. It's going to be continuing tomorrow night, Sunday, 8 p.m. on the Food Network. Worst Cooks in America. Travell will be there front and center for you. Travell, thanks so much for what you're doing. Good luck on the show.
Thank you.
You know, congratulations on getting on it. And, of course, the end goal is that $25,000 and a healthy lifestyle for the family. Continued success. Thanks for jumping on the program today.
Thank you.
Bright light city, gonna set my soul, gonna set my soul on fire.
720 WGN. Hi, atop Chicago in the Allstate Skyline Studio. He's on the road with Dane, live here on Elvis' birthday observed. We understand that his birthday is actual birthday. The real birthday is January 8th, but this is the first time that we've all been together since then, and an opportunity for people to get together and kind of celebrate not only the king, but actually get closer to the king in some other ways, especially for here on the road, on the car side, and on the line with us, excited to have, you know, one of the guys. He is the driving force of a lot of the action, excitement, of course, the autos at Volo Auto Museum, and Brian Grahams in happy Elvis Day, Brian.
Yeah, you too. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right, and it is one of those days that, you know, you hear the music, and, you know, I know that it's been a long time since we've lost Elvis, but, you know, the music is timeless. The fans are endless, right? And so this is an opportunity for you to be able to give the people what they want once more by kind of celebrating Elvis, bringing out those cars. You've got music. You got it all.
Yeah, that's right. We got Travis Morse. He's a tribute artist for Elvis, and he's absolutely fantastic. And we're doing an Elvis birthday celebration here with him. He's doing two performances, and we got free cupcakes, and it's all set, you know, in front of the Elvis Cadillac that we have here on display permanently.
Yeah, see, and it's got, I was able to zoom in a little bit on the picture. It's got the TCB logo. That is something that is very cool. And when it comes to, and you guys have, and we'll talk about it a little bit, you have, I think, you know, cars that really span, whether it's celebrity, whether it's movies, whether it's just classics, right? Famous kind of makes and models that people know and love. But when it comes to like an Elvis car, he was so identified with the car, specifically with the Cadillacs.
Oh yeah, he loved Cadillacs, and you know, like this one here, it's white with a pink roof. Elvis was known in his earlier years to love pink Cadillacs, and in the 70s, the slogan was "White was the new pink." And you know, this one happens to be white with the pink roof.
Now you got cupcakes there. I'm sure Elvis, you know, he enjoyed peanut butter and banana sandwiches. We know that. I'm certainly he enjoyed bacon. A little preview: we're going to have Seth Zura from Bacon Fest coming in, and maybe he'll have a little recon on the history of Elvis's love for bacon. But cupcakes, I'm sure Elvis liked cupcakes, right?
Oh yeah, they are Elvis inspired. You know, we're Akira's Confection and McHenry. They made the cupcakes for us, and they're peanut butter chocolate banana cupcakes, and they are, I tell you, they're absolutely delicious. They're worth the price of admission to get into the museum just for the cupcakes.
I don't think there's any other artist out there, and of course it's the next best thing, right? You know, a tribute artist, an impersonator, if you will, a stylist, someone channeling the musical stylings of an Elvis is as close as we can get, since we don't have him physically here anymore. But I don't think there's another entertainer out there. You know, you don't see a lot of like Barry Manilow entertainers or impersonators, or, you know, there's a number of them that do them as part of shows, that sort of little bits and pieces. But when you get the Elvis impersonators and ones like Travis, who that's really their passion in their life, I mean, they really kind of, I think, pay homage to the entire career. They're singing songs from all over the catalog.
Oh yeah, and it's multi-generational. I mean, I was born in 1976, so I wasn't really around when Elvis was around, but I know Elvis from my parents and grandparents, and looking at the crowd, there's a very big generation. You know, there's kids in strollers that are, you know, shaking and dancing in the music to seniors in the crowd. So it's very wide span.
There's two shows coming up. He's going to be rocking out in maybe a few more minutes, a little bit after three again with that second show. Now you have the cars there, and I'm sure people come up to you and kind of share stuff all the time about different cars or their connection to some cars. Did you have anybody today come up and talk a little bit about maybe they saw Elvis in concert or they knew someone, maybe they did an oil change on one of his cars, anything like that?
Not this time I hadn't, but we have Travis here annually every year he's performing. And last year I did have somebody talking about they used to live in Kansas and they used to pump gasoline. And Elvis was driving through there and he pumped Elvis's car full of gas.
Now, Brian, I know that you're not an Elvis impersonator, but how would Elvis say, how would Elvis get gas back in the days of full service? What would he say? Would he say, like, fill it up, man? What would he say?
Door up.
That's right. That's exactly what
you got me.
Well, people are going to be loving it on Elvis's birthday observed. You've got the cupcakes, you've got Travis, you got the music, you've got the cars, you've got all that. But before we let you go, let's talk a little bit about so many different things. I mean, so many different cars and everything. I see a lot of the social media and a lot of the emails that come through. You guys always have something going on. So for those people that are out there in the area, get out and see you guys today, this afternoon. But as the smoke clears, what's going on in the near future coming up later in January at Volo?
Oh boy, we don't ever stop here. We know that we got to keep changing to keep people coming back, and we do expand far beyond cars. I mean, our car display is pretty impressive with a lot of different TV and movie cars, celebrity owned cars, and that. But there's really something for everybody. We got a lot of Disney stuff. We're working on three more Disney cars that were used in the Disney parades and Disney World. We've got, if you remember, the Rock-a-Fire Explosion, the animatronic band from Showbiz Pizza. We're going to be installing them summer.
Oh, my gosh.
We've got a Crime and Punishment Museum that's going to be going in real shortly here. We're just wrapping that up now, so it should be ready in a month or two.
Wait a minute. Let the listeners know we're talking with Brian Graham. He's one of the, of course, he'll be the first one to say he's very humble. It's part of a team effort out there, and of course it is a family team effort at the Volo Auto Museum. But you mentioned a Crime and Punishment section. Is this where, and we love that true crime stuff, are you going to have like Bonnie and Clyde's shot up car or some kind of getaway cars from Al Capone? What's going to be there?
It's going to go back to the medieval times with the medieval torture devices and that, and span through the gangster era, which would be Bonnie and Clyde. We've got Dillinger's car that Johnny Depp drove in Public Enemy movies, and that was the car he drove in there. So we will have like I said, right from the medieval times on up to the gangster era.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Okay. I think
Much more than cars. There's some of these torture devices are pretty gruesome. So it's an exhibit that's going to be in a room all by itself. So you've got your choice whether you want to go in there or not. But I think curiosity will have most people going in there.
Now, the car that you got for Elvis Day, it is one of his authentic Cadillacs. You're seeing the real thing for the torture devices. Is this like the stocks at the Wild West World, where you're going to have fun and put your head in there? Or are these authentically, were these used to torture actual ancient people?
These are authentic. It used to be a sideshow that traveled to the fairs back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and the guy that actually toured with him was shot, and they packed everything up and put it in his basement, and it was just recently that it was rediscovered, and we bought the entire sideshow and expanding upon it and creating a whole museum on it.
Brian, this falls into the little something for everybody category, I think, as far as that goes. Here's the other thing, as we let you go, because so many of the things, it certainly is worthy of kind of getting out there, bringing the family. There's a little something for everybody. There's stuff for the kids to do. But also a lot of these cars, and before we let you go, give the website, there's auctions. You can buy these things too.
Yeah, we do a lot of classic car sales. Every once in a while, one of the museum cars, which would be a movie car, celebrity car, will come up for sale. But we go through about 1,200 cars a year of the standard production classic cars.
Wow. Okay, so Brian, before we let you go, give the website out so people can get information about all the events coming up, when they can get out there and see some amazing cars, movie cars, torture devices, all that work, and they go.
Yeah, they can go to our website, which is volocars.com, and they can find us on Facebook as well, which is Volo Auto Museum. And if you go to our website, prepare to sit down for a while. There's a lot of information, a lot to check out there, so comfortable.
A lot to check out on the website, certainly in person as well. Brian, thanks so much for jumping on the air today. Go get yourself some Elvis, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, right, Ashley? And then we're going to come back and send it to news, right? On the Road with Dane, 720 WGN.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
Oh, yeah. It's really a bad time to be on the road with the, because it's kind of inclement weather out there. So hopefully you're not on the road. Hopefully you are, and you're tuned to WGN 720. On the road with Dane here in the Allstate Skyline studio, high atop Chicagoland. And I think this is an exciting time. We talk about road trips all the time, family road trips, places we go. And there are few better places to go than just to our neighbors to the south, to Indiana. And we talk about the racing there. We talk about a lot of the things that are going on, certainly the museums, the parks. There's a bunch of things in Indiana. And no better people group, right, to talk about it is than what we have assembled here today. We have Amy Howell. She's the Director of Communications for Visit Indiana. We've got Kim Harms from the Indianapolis Children's Museum, the largest one in the world. And we've got Lindsay Skeen. She is from Foodways, Indiana, and she has got some, we talk about food all the time, and that's some of the best things that you can have when you make it into your road trip. So guys, welcome to WGN.
Thanks for having us.
You guys made it. you braved not only the elements, but the roadways, and you made your own personal road trip a little longer than you planned on it, but here you are, and you're here in Chicago, kind of carrying the torch as ambassadors for Indiana. Let's talk to Amy. So let's talk about it. I know that there are a ton of things to do. I know that there are so many things to do, and there's some, I think, that come immediately to the mind of not only myself, but listeners, but as far as like your job kind of assembling all of these activities, that's pretty cool.
Absolutely. I say, come on over to the South Shore and see what we have to offer. So I know a lot of people may know about the dunes. They're spectacular. So, just across the lake, we have a 3 dunes challenge. Get your heart pumping. You climb up those sand dunes, jump in the lake on our side. We have beautiful, beautiful beaches. But we even have a new attraction that just opened in Whiting right after Christmas, Mascot Hall of Fame Museum.
Oh.
Have you been there?
I have not. I did see some of the things. I'm an observer of the passing scene, and I saw some of the great mascots come through. And,
yes.
So what do you have, like San Diego Chicken? Is he there?
Well, they actually have their own mascot, but, Benny the Bull's there sometimes.
Nice.
But, it's very interactive where you can, put your hands in and see how heavy the mascot's arms and gloves are. You can build your own mascot, similar to like Build-A-Bear.
Yeah,
things like that.
Oh, that's actually pretty cool.
Yeah,
I think kids love Build-A-Bear, and for the parents out there, I think they know that this is a and sorry, it's a treacherous place because you get in there, the Build-A-Bear, it's like they almost want to give you the bear, right? But then
right.
All the outfits and shoes and suitcases and grooming kits and whatever they need usually kind of adds up. But if you can get something that's your favorite mascot or you can make your own, I think that's totally different than anybody's.
It absolutely
doing.
Is. Nobody else is doing it anywhere. I mean, trivia for mascots all over the country. I mean, it's just very interactive. They have a green screen there, and you can pretend to be your favorite mascot. I mean, there's so many things to do. It just opened a couple days after Christmas, so it's brand new, beautiful on the lake shores in Whiting. Home of Pierogi Fest.
Oh, my gosh. Pierogi Fest, that's a big deal.
It is a big deal. Over about 300,000 people visit it the last weekend in July every year.
Yeah,
so
we talk about Pierogi Fest all the time. You don't even necessarily think about it as Indiana, but it is, right? People think of maybe Indianapolis, and certainly we talk about that, and there's a lot of great things that happen there in the racing. But Amy, some of the coolest things, happen outside of Indianapolis throughout the state. You've got a lot of parks. You've got
Absolutely.
A lot of either attractions and, whether it's activities and museums and amusement parks and all sorts of things going on all over the place.
Absolutely. Kim, she'll expand on the Children's Museum, which you talked about. And then we have food for miles. I mean, it can start on the South Shore. I mean, there's a brewery trail there. There's a spirited brew trail on the Indiana Foodways Alliance. I mean, we have over 250 wineries across the state of Indiana. And most of them are on-site vineyards and bottle them themselves and drink in their rooms on site. I mean, beautiful orchards. So pick your own while you're there.
As the person who has to share a lot of what goes on in Indiana, is, you know, what would you say is the biggest either misconception or thing that people, that you have to either correct people or have to fill them in and say, hey, wait, did you know this?
A lot of people think we're landlocked, and we're not. We also have the Ohio River down south. So not only Lake Michigan, but the Ohio River. And everyone thinks we're flat. We're not. We have the dunes.
Lots of fields.
Yeah, and they think we have lots of fields, which we do have Amish country in northern Indiana and in southern Indiana. But once you get past our capital city of Indianapolis, beautiful hills for mountain biking and canoeing, and we have beautiful rivers to do all of those things and hiking. I mean, our trail system, we're trying to expand it at the moment, but I mean, for biking and hiking, and our campsites and our cabins in our state parks are just gorgeous. I mean, summer is a great time to do all of that, but I mean, the leaves in the fall, the colors that you see when you get to southern Indiana, when you get to Brown County, and when you get to Bloomington, and when you get to French Lick, and all those places that I just named that many of your listeners probably haven't heard of, the colors are just phenomenal to see, the reds, the greens, the
It's brown. Weird. You think of it, and we do think of it, and certainly it's a, you know, there's a lot of agriculture that happens in Indiana, but as a guy who has to travel from here, not has to, get to, from here to Florida, we'll go through Indiana, you get to see the whole thing. You really do have it all. Like you said, you mentioned the coast, you mentioned some of the, I don't want to say necessarily mountains, but all sorts of different kind of terrain and topography, and of course the views and the leaves are great. Sometimes the things that people love the most is great food, right? And so Lindsay is in studio with us as well. Lindsay Skeen, she's the marketing media director for Foodways Alliance. And this is very cool. Some of the cool things we do in Chicago as far as food tours and trips where you can get a chance to check out different things. You're doing it for the whole state, right? You've got a bunch of different things.
We are a membership marketing organization, and we have 19 different food trails that are statewide. We recently just had a story published by USA Today on our Tenderloin Lovers Trail.
There's a Tenderloin Lovers Trail?
There is a Tenderloin Lovers Trail. Pork tenderloin sandwiches galore in Indiana. As you know, it's our unofficial
mascot. Is it in the mascot?
It's a state, unofficial state sandwich.
Yeah, unofficial state sandwich. And so, you know, whether you, you know, like them pounded really big and thin and, or, you know, you just prefer it, you know, with the bun rather than a huge.
Is this like a 2-week vacation to do this trail? Because no, I'm thinking about it. It's one thing if you're just taking little bites, but a tenderloin sandwich, I don't know how many I could do in a day. Maybe two, right?
Well, it's basically really suggestions on where to get the best sandwich statewide.
Oh, gotcha.
So, you know.
It's not like a pub crawl, right? You have to have something.
No. You wouldn't want to eat more than one in one day. But we also have the Hoosier Pie Trail, which is paying homage to all things pie in Indiana. And more specifically, the sugar cream pie, which is the unofficial state pie as well.
We got to get some of these unofficial things, the official things.
They won't do it. They won't make anything official.
I think, and that's
Amy's
okay.
The person to talk to because,
she is,
you know,
she is.
If you're going to visit Indiana and see some official things, she can do that.
But we love it because, you know, our mission is to really help these local restaurants that are locally owned in the smaller towns within Indiana and through the state. And help them market their local restaurant.
Well, okay, so you've got the pie one, and you've got the Tenderloin Trail.
A So Delicious Trail, which
what does that even mean?
Handcrafted sodas.
Okay.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, spirited brews, which are the distilleries, the breweries. And we have some great distilleries around Indiana. Some of the members on our trail, specifically French Licks, Distillery, Oakley Brothers in Anderson, Indiana, which is actually housed in an old historic building from, I think it was
a garage,
like an automotive garage.
So you've got, on the spirit side, you've got one thing, Amy mentioned a little bit about some of the wineries, but It's the internet's great, right? It allows us to be kind of informed and sort of educated, inspired to get out and do things in ways that maybe we couldn't do before. Like, what was the inspiration for Foodways? How did this start? Was it local mom and pop places? Was it maybe people like you or that got out and said, geez, we got to get the word out. We've got to let people know.
It was actually started by an organization from Convention and Visitors Bureaus that put together and tried to find out, okay, what do we all have in common that we can market? Well, food is the common place. You know, food is the common theme here. And that's how the trails began. And people pay a membership, and then we do the marketing for them through those trails.
And people are able to kind of find some of these. It's hard, right? And to have them curated by you guys, vetted, where you know where the best pork tenderloin sandwiches are, where the best pie is, and where all that. So people can just make a beeline right to them.
All these restaurants, they go through an assessment process. And so they are vetted to get our seal of approval.
That's okay. So here's the thing. When I think of it, it's like unofficially, it's Elvis's birthday observed, and we talk with Brian Grahams about the Cadillacs that they've got up in Volo. And I think of some of these foods, pork tenderloin sandwiches. It's not a peanut butter banana sandwich, but I'm sure Elvis enjoyed a pork tenderloin sandwich. I'm sure he enjoyed every manner and kind of pie, right? Exactly. And in studio with us, and we're going to get more into the museum side of things as soon as we come back from the break. But Kim Harms is with us. She is one of those great voices and ambassadors for one of the world's preeminent museums. It is the Children's Museum of Indianapolis. And Kim, you were telling us before the break that when it comes to Elvis, Indiana has a great connection, right? He made that
Absolutely.
His final road trip, right? When it comes to performances.
Right.
To
his
Indiana.
Final performance was actually there at the Dome, which has now been imploded, but that was in June 26,
19... in his honor.
Right, yeah.
I'm sure.
That was in 1977, and I think his, you know, like 18,000 people attended that concert, and he introduced a lot of really famous people and important people in his life. And so some people kind of think maybe he knew that the end was near, and so that he had all those special people there with him. Yeah. Thank you very much.
So that's that great connection. And so when we come back from the break, we're going to talk with Kim Harms about the Children's Museum of Indianapolis. And it's all the things that you'd think a museum should have on the children's side, on the education, but also a lot of pop culture. We'll find out if maybe there's some Elvis stuff there. Sports-wise, I mean, you can do almost anything, get up close and personal with dinosaurs in ways you can do almost nowhere else on the planet. So keep it here. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. It's On the Road with Dane 720 WGN.
Dana with the wet barn on the farm down in Indiana. For the sycamore trees where the Wabash tweezers play. What's more, white pine?
All right, 720 WGN. On the road with Dane, high atop Chicagoland and the Allstate Skyline Studio. Ashley, is that like a duet between Elmer Fudd and Bugs Bunny?
Yeah, they're thinking about Indiana.
Well, you know what? A lot of people are. And we are as well. In studio with us, we got Amy Howell. She is with Visit Indiana. We've got Kim Harms from the Indianapolis Children's Museum. Lindsay Skeen from Foodways Alliance. We're talking about getting out to Indiana, some of the cool places that that people can go, some of the things that they can experience. Somebody had mentioned a quick question over the texter in 312-981-7200. We'll have a couple minutes. They asked, like, dog-friendly places. I think, is Indiana in general a relatively dog-friendly state?
Absolutely. All of our state parks are very dog-friendly. And they do, some of them even do their own dog walks, but we have several hotels that are dog friendly. French Lick, Indianapolis, Hamilton County, and the surrounding areas of Indy, very dog friendly. So the answer is yes, in general. Just call. Or if you're there, just walk in and ask.
Just bring your dog and see what happens.
Exactly. Let me just say one thing. Hoosier hospitality is a real thing, so it never hurts to ask.
You know what? The hospitality knows no bounds when it comes to the Indianapolis Children's Museum, and Kim Harms is in studio with us. And so let's talk about it. This is a place that is an easy road trip away, but it is a place that I'm sure brings in people from around the world, right? But it's something that I think you take it for granted, right? It's the biggest in the world when it comes to Children's Museum.
It is the biggest. And one of the neat things we just found out in the first few days of this new year, we were acknowledged by LonelyPlanet.com as one of the top places in the world to take your family.
Wow.
MSN.com and Reader's Digest both listed us as the best attraction in the state of Indiana. And then I can't say where we ranked because it's embargoed for a couple more weeks, but USA Today ranked us within the top 10 of attractions to see with your family. And a lot of that is based around the new Sports Legends experience, Riley Children's Health Sports Legends experience with over a dozen sports things you can do. You can throw a football. You can play basketball. The hoops are graduated in size. Yep. So, but you're not allowed to dunk if you go to the little kids. I tried and I got in trouble.
I want to dunk on a little kid. So you've got the sports side of it, and I cannot recommend it enough as far as that, because not only are there sports on the museum side exhibits where they show you a little bit of the history in the background, but you can experience them, and it isn't necessarily just the traditional sports. You've got the, you know, football, you've got golf, you've got, you know, all sorts of, but you also have motorsports too, you know, which is
right.
You've got NASCAR's got an exhibit as well.
Yeah, well, we have it's all about health and fitness. So they're not motorized cars to drive, but they are pedal cars. So we have a drag race strip, and then we also have the oval racing strip. And, you know, my son's basketball team came. They're 14-year-olds, and then their coach is in college. I don't know who had more fun. They were, like, racing each other. And, you know, I thought that they would kind of avoid the basketball because they do that all the time. But, boy, they were out there just having a blast.
It's it is really cool. The facilities are pretty amazing. But also, too, and we mentioned a little bit about the pop culture stuff. You guys have that, too. So not only traditional kind of the, you know, the things that you would normally see in school, but a lot of fun stuff as well.
Exactly. Star Trek is coming to the Children's Museum of Indianapolis this year. So live long and prosper, my friends. We have Doug Jones, who's a famous actor. He's been in The Shape of Water and in the new series about Star Trek. He's going to come visit. He actually, his hometown is Indianapolis. And so we have a lot of cool things coming up with Star Trek in February, along with Paw Patrol for littler kids. But a couple of really cool exhibits that I'm excited about is we're opening a whole new cultural exhibit called Take Me There, Greece and Ancient and Treasures of Ancient Greece. So two separate exhibits.
Okay, I was thinking, like, tell me about it, stud. I was thinking. Yeah.
No. Although my husband would love to see Sandy there. but it's really, really cool. Over 200 artifacts, including huge marbles and bronze and art and things like that. A lot of mythology, talk about the history of the Olympics. And then Take Me There, Greece is more about modern day Greece. And so there are a lot of cool things. They drink coffee like nobody's business there. Iced coffee and regular coffee.
Is there a chain smoking exhibit there too?
No. But a lot of things about the sea, how to save endangered turtles, because of course they have all the islands with Greece. So a lot of very neat educational things. And people don't realize, like, you know, you call it the birthplace of Western civilization, but so many inventions come from Greece, you know, from alarm clocks to cartography or making of maps, odometers, computers. We'll have a replica of the first ever computer that was found in Antikythera, and it's called the Antikythera mechanism. And it's just amazing that, you know, centuries ago, they had a computer. And, you know, here we think we're smart, but, you know, they started it all. So it's just amazing to find out some of those things.
Yeah, and a lot of interaction stuff, too.
Right.
I know that there's exhibits where you can learn, where the kids get to get in there and really learn and do. And then when you think ancient, you guys go all the way back. And it would be, we wouldn't want to miss mentioning, you know, the dinosaur exhibit, right? Where you have one of the... Where it's like, is it like a frozen dinosaur or something?
It's a mummified dinosaur, and there's only a handful of them in the world, but you actually get to see its musculature, and you see the vertebrae and tendons.
And the skin, how it was. So much of that, when the people come out, hey, they're purple, and this is the noise they make. I always say, well, how would you know? It's just a bone. Well, here, you really do get to see how they're made.
Right. There's a puncture wound in this particular dinosaur fossil we have, Leonardo, and it shows what they first ate, because they had conifers and magnolia and things like that. And we also have another huge dinosaur announcement to make in the first quarter that I can't say yet, but we're partnering with people from around the world, and it's a big deal.
It's going to be exciting. So I know you guys are in town. You're going to be heading back out on the road to Rosemont to kind of share what it is, carrying the torch and being the ambassadors for Indiana with so many of our different media members. But before we let you go, let's give out the websites. We'll have them all listed at WGNradio.com. But so go ahead for Foodways, for those tours, Tenderloin and more.
So IndianaFoodways.com, that is our address for Indiana Foodways Alliance. Or you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And visit Indiana in general, which has so many things.
Yep. Trip ideas, anything you want. Our blog talks about the real people experiences that they're having. So anything you want to know made in Indiana. We just posted a new blog about Fair Oaks Farms. They just are getting ready to open their new hotel, so you can stay on site.
Wow.
So that's exciting. And anything you want to know that's uniquely Indiana or made in Indiana that you can't get in Chicago or Illinois, That's on visitindiana.com and all of the same social sites as well.
And then, Kim, of course, people from around the world come there. But for those people who want to see all the exhibits, all that action, kind of make plans to see you, where can they go?
Children'sMuseum.org. And as I mentioned, Sports Legends Experience, Pete Dye Golf Course there for kids. And the Fort in Indianapolis was just named one of the most beautiful natural courses in the country. And he designed it. One of those holes is at our museum.
And we have a Pete Dye Golf Trail on, and there's also PeteDyeGolf.com.
The Pete Dye Golf, and then, of course, the pie. You got to add pies and tenderloin to the trail.
I mean, the Hoosier Pie Trail.
It's a think tank right here. All right, so appreciate and love what you guys do and encourage everybody to make that road trip, get out to Indiana, starting right now and, of course, through the entire year. We're going to take a break. Ashley, we're going to take a break and then send it to news? Okay, we're going to take a quick break, send it to news. We'll be right back on the road, 720 WGN.
What if I drop my phone?
Rub some bacon on it.
Or encounter my clone?
Rub some bacon on it.
I get mononucleosis.
Rub some bacon on it.
My nude pics get posted.
Rub some bacon on it. Rub some bacon on it. Rub some
720 WGN on the road with Jane, live here in the Allstate Skyline Studio, high atop Chicagoland, and I think a cure to all ills, whether it's, you know, problems in the international relations, whether it seems like Ebola, right? It seemed like that song just said rub some bacon on it. I know that people see it as kind of a cure-all for if you're down and out, maybe if you're glum, you're blue, maybe you get some sad spirits, right? Bacon is going to be the thing that's going to bring you back to life, and I mentioned it before we went to the break, all roads for those people in the know and educated in the worlds of great taste, all roads lead to Bacon Fest for its 11th installation coming up April 5th and 6th at the UIC Forum. And the man behind it all, you always say, you know, cutting edge, visionary, and he's all of those things. I think, you know, down the road, they say that history will look back and assess the importance of things. And I think it is kind of like a Thomas Edison, a Setzer, as far as, because when you're bringing people together and all of a sudden you're just dispensing so much goodwill and great food. He is in studio. Seth Zur, welcome to WGN.
Thank you, Dane. You know, I'm just a simple man, a man who loves bacon.
All the great ones are humble like that. Like if you look at Bill Gates, he's like, computers, what about them? You know, I don't know. I was just hanging out, tinkering.
Yeah. When I reach Bill Gates' level of wealth and influence, then perhaps we can discuss the history books. But for now, Bacon Fest is back for an 11th year, April 5th and 6th.
Once we kind of ease into year 14, 15, I think you'll be at, because, you know, compound interest and all that kind of stuff, you'll be reaching Gates territory. But this is it. And here's the thing. You do it. And it is one of those beloved events. It is one that has gained recognition, accolades from around the country. We've had some of the biggest food stars not only know what it is, but actually come and attend. And it's one of those things that I don't want to say it's put Chicago on the map, but it certainly is one of the highlights for food people around the country. They think of bacon. They think of Bacon Fest Chicago.
I think that's true. You know, we as a city have long maintained a reputation as hog butcher for the world, and Bacon Fest in a way is the logical culmination of Chicago's history. And so I'm happy to bring it into existence. I'm happy to share it with Chicagoans who, like me, love bacon.
Because you could have. You know, I'm sure as you guys were planning the event, and we'll get into the story. I know the story by heart. I could almost do it, you know, like the kids have asked. They're like, hey, you know, Dad, can you read us the Bacon Fest story again? I'm like, again, it's like three bears. So we know that. But I think initially as you guys sort of brainstormed the whole thing, you thought to yourself, this is almost too good to share with the world. Let's just keep this as a private event.
That was attempting originally to make it just like our own personal Bacon Fest.
Just as many chefs.
Yeah, right,
just
exactly.
As many dishes.
And our capacity as Bacon Fest co-founders for ingestion of bacon is considerable. But even we live up to the expectations. Newski's Bacon delivers 4 tons, nearly 8,000 pounds of bacon every year to chefs around the city, almost 150 restaurants. And each of them works it into their special take on Chicago cuisine. Like today, I have this stuff from Haisu, which is this incredible restaurant in Pilsen, opened maybe a couple years ago. They were a Beard semifinalist last year. It's this incredible chef named Tai Dang. He does haute cuisine with a Vietnamese spin, cooking sort of recipes of Vietnamese origin, but with incredible high-end quality ingredients. So he takes one look at Bacon Fest and says, okay, well, what am I going to do? They have a cafe next to the restaurant where they serve brioche, which is a beautiful pastry made with pandan leaf, which is a herb that's used pretty frequently in Vietnamese cooking. And he fills it usually with coconut cream. But for us, he said, okay, well, I'm going to put some bacon fat into the brioche dough. So we're going to have this sort of foundation of bacon in the pastry. I'm going to put bacon fat into the coconut cream. So on the inside, you get another hit. And then we have crumbled bacon in there as well. So that's Haisu's approach to working bacon into the cuisine that he specializes in.
You know, it's kind of a playground for the taste buds and even for the chefs themselves. And I know that they, having talked with a number of them over the years, I know that they look forward to this as kind of an opportunity. You know, in the chef world, you know, they're helping, you know, making people happy, serving dishes. But this is an opportunity to get out there, think outside the box a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
For some of them, this is business as usual. It's right in the wheelhouse. For some, it's like, let's get creative.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I am not sure, and I've given this quite a bit of thought, as I love this event because it is a way to really showcase the diversity of the restaurants and the talents of Chicago. Chicago is one of the few places, I'll contend, that were, and I'll do the whole, you know, you can spin the globe and put your finger there and you can get high level cuisine from any place in the world right here in Chicago. And I don't know that there's a lot of places that could really represent a Bacon Fest event like Chicago can, right? Because you have everything from kind of ma and pa, every bit like cafe kind of stuff that's just, you know, just regular everyday food, all the way to some of the top, you mentioned Beard finalists, all to some of the best chefs recognized in the country, and they're all on that same level playing field, and they're all playing nice together.
They get along very well. It's like there's a real spirit of camaraderie. I don't want to say that it's because of bacon, but it is because of bacon, because as you say, bacon is a comfort and a thing that people, when they try it, they're happy, it tastes good, and they get along with their fellow human being.
Human nature would lend someone, if they find something out there that they really like, it would be, I think, the human nature, in a lot of people, maybe not myself, and certainly not you, but to hoard it as much as they could and keep it all for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't you, Seth. No. As soon as you, and so we're going to hear the origin story where you decided, wow, bacon is this thing. I don't know if it was an epiphany or just a recognition of something we've all grown to kind of just appreciate and acknowledge, is that you said, like, bacon is awesome. Let's try to share bacon with the world in as big a way as possible. And you and your friends got together, right? That's how it happened.
Yeah, it was a dark and stormy night in 2009, I want to say.
Has it changed at all where there was like, you know, where you've got sound effects? Has the story changed at all? Because we, you know, you hear that like true history stuff where it's a little bit different than really what happened.
What's that line from Liberty Valance? If you want to print the rumor, if it's better than the truth.
Yes.
So the story has evolved somewhat, but the kernel is the same, which is that I was a mild-mannered, unemployed,
wasn't a hostage
former
situation.
Travel agent.
Okay,
no hostage situation. Nakahoshi. What's the Die Hard Plaza? No, that's not what happened.
Right.
I was unemployed. My wife was pregnant, also unemployed. I was in a mode where I was ready to say yes to things. And when my two buddies got drunk and had an idea and called me at 11:30 p.m. saying, dude, Burning Man of Bacon, what do you think? I had no choice but to say yes. Yes.
You're like, why? Now, did you say yes because, of course, you're supportive of your friends?
Yes.
I mean, you understood that bacon had some appeal, so it wasn't terrible, right? This was like a pretty decent idea. You had no idea that it was going to extend into what has now become something that extends far beyond you, right? I think that the people would riot if it didn't exist, right? Seth, you've got some responsibilities here.
Well, I hate to say that they would riot, but I just would hate to think what would happen in Chicago if there was no Bacon Fest. Right. It would be too sad. It's grown way beyond what we ever expected. We didn't come from an event background. We weren't like Chicago Gourmet, like people that
so you thought start small.
We thought start small. We have 10 chefs. We borrowed the dining room of the Publican for a Saturday afternoon.
How did you talk? This is great. So the Publican, Paul Kahn, you know, really around the country, wherever you go, like loved and respected, certainly, you know, accoladed on the as a restaurateur here. How'd you talk him into this? Especially with the way that you described it. Hey, I'm an unemployed travel agent. I've got a pregnant wife. My friends were drunk. They called me. Let's get together.
In the great Chicago tradition, somebody sent us. So we had connections. I had worked in some restaurant PR, and I knew the publicist who worked with Khan and had sort of shepherded him to his first Beard win. And so I emailed her and said, hey.
So you can highly recommend it.
Basically, I cold called her, and I worked her, and then she introduced me to him and was like, oh, sure, whatever. Saturday afternoon, no problem. Bring in some chefs. We brought in some really great chefs. And these are chefs that now are the luminaries of the Chicago dining scene. We've got Chris Pandel.
Is it because of their early, you know, affiliation with Bacon Fest?
I mean, obviously, right? Okay. Obviously, we made the fortune.
Yeah, no, have
these
like
chefs
a
are talented would, chefs on their own.
I would love to see a George Bailey-style documentary based on Seth Zurer and, of course, your partners, where, like, what if Bacon Fest didn't exist?
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, Pandel's just like, everyone's probably, along with the theme, everyone's, like, destitute and homeless, right?
I have a feeling that Pandel might have landed on his feet. But I'm not saying it didn't help. That's
right.
All I'm saying.
Absolutely.
You know? But yeah, Bacon Fest, a storied history, and people can experience it now. It's not just an anecdote.
So you
it's an actual event.
You have the history. You started out with 10 chefs. Now you're up to how many?
150 restaurants, around about 8,000 pounds of bacon, somewhere around 4,500 ticketed guests over the course of 2 days. There's three different sessions. People want to go on Friday night. We have a few discounted tickets left on sale at our website, baconfestchicago.com.
We're going to get to all the ways that you can get in on this, experience it, and of course, kind of that vast range of restaurants that are participating. We'll pick out some highlights. We're actually going to get one on the phone as well, right?
That's
we're
going
to talk to somebody. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're talking Bacon Fest Year 11. Seth Zurer in studio on the road with Dane, 720 WGN.
Bacon.
Doesn't. 720 WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Skyline studio, high atop Chicago. We can see out still, even with the inclement weather. We can see a pretty far distance, and everyone we see is a bacon lover. We know that. Seth Zurer, he is the what would you call it? The
curator?
Benevolent dictator of bacon.
Sure.
Right? You know, he's the guy out there that is creating this event, bringing people in, giving them what they need. And it started out with 10 restaurants. That's what it took to satisfy Chicagoland. And now, of course, they need more, like any healthy addiction. And now we're up to like 150 restaurants giving people what they want, multiple sessions. So let's talk about the restaurants. I know we're going to have somebody on the line in a minute or so. But, I mean, it's a big range, right?
Yeah, it is a range. So like you said, everything from a mom and pop shop to a 3 Michelin star fancy restaurant. So like one of my favorite sort of ranges is Carnitas Uruapan, which is this great Pilsen Carnitas shop.
Marcos.
Right, exactly. So they've come and done like a bacon version of Carnitas, where they make Carnitas, which is sort of cooked in fat, but with it's an incredible breakfast dish.
It's kind of what would you call it? It's kind of like a fajito.
Yeah, you make a taco out of it, whatever. But that's a very simple sort of heart-filled, soul-filled local favorite, all the way to somebody like V Restaurant, who's been there since the very beginning. You know, this is a chef who's been Beard nominated multiple times. He's doing Michelin star cuisine in Western Springs. He's like bringing this incredible attitude towards seasonal produce, and they come back every year for Bacon Fest because they too love bacon. Everybody from Pilsen to Western Springs, and everywhere in between.
Everybody can get together and I think appreciate a good time, and certainly for the fans out there, it's big. But this is a title that people want to win. I mean, I don't know how many times I've had to look into the sad face of a Kevin Hickey, right? As he didn't win, you know.
That's right.
Because not everybody can win. Only, you know, you've got different sessions. People can win, and there's some People Choice Awards, some exciting things happening with that as well. But the chefs, do they get into it because they love bacon, and obviously they love you? Or is it mostly to take away the coveted golden rasher?
You know, every chef gets involved for a different reason, but there is definitely a section of the event of the chefs who are there because they are there to win, and they want to win. They want the glory of a golden rasher award for the most creative use of bacon. And it's not an easy award to win. Like Honey Butter Fried Chicken has actually taken it home 3 times the last 3 years for a different dish every year. Bacon ramen with fried chicken, bacon grits with like a bacon buffalo hot sauce with fried chicken. They keep it always on the fried chicken theme, but always with bacon. And like people get mad.
They seem to have cracked the code. They could maybe do sort of a tutorial or some kind of a, you know, online thing. Like, hey, do you want to, like the guy who wins the lottery all the time. He's like, get with me, buy my infomercial. Well, you know, there's a lot of different motivations. Obviously, it's to make people happy, help your customers. Of course, win the golden rasher. So Chef Ty Dang is on the line. Chef, what's it for you? What's your motivation for being a part of Bacon Fest?
Hey, you know, my motivation is just doing something, you know, out of the ordinary and incorporating bacon into Vietnamese cuisine. And I you know, I've been a big fan of Bacon Fest and just, you know, Seth and his work on just creating something so awesome and bringing people together for a fun event. And we thought it would be, you know, such a cool thing to showcase something unique and played with, you know, pastries here that I make in-house with my team, and so they're super excited for it.
Yeah, and we're delighted to have you. Thank you very much. I mean, Chef Ty has been, I think, at Bacon Fest three different times. I don't know how seriously, Ty, you take the competition part of the event. Are you hot to win a prize, or are you just there for the good times?
I'm there for the good time, but, you know, inside, you know, you're kind of, I'm very competitive. I would like to win, but, you know, that's not the...
Yeah.
Well, it's fun to just see what people come up with and be a part of something that is so interesting and has been going on for all these years.
Well, let the listeners know we're talking with Chef Ty Deng. And here's the thing. So you get to Bake Event. You've got your own, and you've had, you know, your expertise and your talent's been recognized, obviously. But you have kind of your fan base. And this is an opportunity where you can really open yourself up. I've had this happen a ton of times where I have been introduced to restaurants that I was not all that familiar with. But through Bacon Fest, you're like, wait a minute. These guys are doing some great stuff. Is that part of it, too? After you do Bacon Fest, do you get a lot of new people in that say, like, hey, you know, we loved what you did there and want to see the rest of it?
Yeah, I think that is also, you know, another aspect of it, and you know, to showcase something fun and go outside of the box and make and incorporating bacon, which, you know, Vietnamese, so every culture has a bacon, right? But you know, Vietnamese, we don't normally use it, but there are some Vietnamese that come to America and incorporate bacon into bánh xèo, you know, the crispy rice crepe or a dish that, you know, their parents couldn't find regular pork belly or cured Vietnamese style or Asian style, so then they use bacon. And so, yeah, Vietnamese, there's some part of you know, the U.S. that kids grow up, Vietnamese households that use bacon in things. And, you know, it's fun to incorporate that here with Bacon Fest this year.
Well, Chef, before we let you go, give the information on the restaurant, like the website where people can find out. Certainly people will see you at Bacon Fest, Fest April 5th and 6th. But where can they kind of see what you're doing in the meantime?
Yeah, we're located at 1800 South Carpenter. It's, a historic landmark building, and it's at the corner of 18th Street and South Carpenter, next to Don Pedro's Carnitas. And so we have our Cafe Da next door, and then Hai Su, which we open dinner only Monday through Saturday, and then brunch Saturdays and Sunday. But the cafe is open all day from 7 a.m. till midnight.
And then the website, Chef?
Yeah, the website, you could find us at www.haisu.com.
All right, we're going to have that up at WGNRadio.com. Good luck, and we'll see you at Bacon Fest. Thanks for jumping on.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
All right, so this is, you know, part of the, I think that the range of the competition, you get people that don't necessarily do this on a regular basis, step out of their comfort zone to get out there. And he says he's there for the good times. That's what
you
want.
That's where everybody has a good time. Whether you're a chef or a guest or a judge or a sponsor, you're going to have a good time. And you get the benefit of knowing that your good time helps support the Greater Chicago Food Depository.
So you get a good feeling, you get good times.
Good karma, exactly.
Great food. So how can people get in on the good times ticket-wise?
Yeah, so they go to baconfestchicago.com, click on the tickets link, and you can buy them online. You have to get them online ahead of the event. There are a few discounted Friday dinner tickets left available right now, but there's still full price tickets available for all three sessions. People should get on them. The event has been known to sell out in the past, so you don't want to snooze on the Bacon Fest tickets.
The reputation is there. And then also there's some other cool, fun ways for people to enjoy it. You have some activations, you know, for those people that love certain things. Like, you still have the bourbon activation. You guys going to do something along the lines
of that? We're going to do something. We're working on some really fun pop-up content for each of the VIP hours, which I'm not at liberty to divulge right now. But we're going to do fun stuff with that lounge. I don't know if it'll be bourbon again, or we're going to have some other cool ideas for that. We'll have, of course, the Breakthrough Beverage Mega Bar with five different cocktails at Bacon Fest itself. We have an incredible lineup of chefs with new chefs from new restaurants coming. It's going
to
be sweet.
And this year you're actually expanding or including the opportunity for people to vote themselves, right? That
correct,
leaderboard
yes.
was awesome.
Last year, for the first time, we had a live leaderboard where People's Choice Awards, people could vote with their phone, text in their favorite restaurant for the best bacon dish People's Choice Award. So more opportunities to win.
Website?
BaconFestChicago.com.
Seth Zero, the man behind Bacon Fest. We're going to take a quick break, then we're going to come back, and then we'll send it to news before the beat. It's On the Road with Dane, 720 WGN.